All right, this is the Dakota Free Press Podcast. I'm Spencer Thompson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. In today's program, how healthy do we think we are? China wants our beef. New library, new Americans in Aberdeen. Non-meandered waters resolved, sort of. And our big interview with peer political maven Roxanne Weber.
How are we doing this week, Corey?
Hey, I survived the thunderstorm. I'm feeling good. How about you, Spencer?
Congratulations. Yeah, the cats were a little freaked out, but we didn't get ripped up by a tornado, and I had a bone ripped out of my head.
Oh, my gosh.
That was my last wisdom tooth. If I have a superpower, it's the ability to get wisdom teeth removed and it not being that big of a deal.
Yeah,
The doctor was a little surprised at how quickly I was in and out of the chair. And it's not like I have gummy teeth. I have great teeth. But when it's time for them to go, they just right out. It was fantastic.
I'm glad it went well for you, but it kind of, as a superpower, it's kind of a bummer. You only
sucks.
Get to use it, what, like four times?
And you're not going to stop a bank robbery with that.
Not unless you, you've got really hard teeth. Throw them. But yeah, now you're out. You better find a new superpower.
Speaking of superpowers, rest in peace, Adam West. Thanks for being Batman. Okay, let's get to it. Topic one. You think you're healthy, Corey?
You bet. How about you?
I do think I'm healthy, although maybe I'm not.
Well,
but I think I am.
You're short one more tooth now, but that's a minor thing.
But that was a tooth that needed to go, so that's perfectly fine. Here's the point of what we're going to talk about, though. There's a difference between thinking you're healthy and being healthy, right?
Sure.
So before the ACA, among the poorest third of Americans studied, 38.2% report being in fair to poor health. 38.2.
More than a third not feeling good about themselves.
Right, as compared to 12.3% of the richest third who felt they were in poor health, but they have the kind of money where you get to be a hypochondriac. So you can just feel like you're not doing well all the time because it's fun.
But even there, yeah, I think the point is a lot more rich people in America feel healthy than do poor people.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, does that happen everywhere?
Well, only Chile and Portugal have larger income-based gap in the health status of their citizens. And we're not winning this one. We want to be number one, but Japan and Switzerland, only in Japan and Switzerland were people about equally healthy regardless of their wealth. And that seems like something that that really should be addressed. You know, if you're of the opinion that healthcare is a right, not a privilege, then rich people and poor people should get the same kind of health care. And I'm not talking about facelifts and cosmetic surgery. I'm talking about nuts and bolts, ears, nose, and throat doctor stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, we did kind of do something about it. We're going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as they said about ACA a billion times, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Well, it turns out we did some good.
Okay, because the data we started talking about there, that came from, it was a Harvard study.
2012.
And the data for America was from 2012.
Right.
And that was before the ACA really kicked in with the provisions like Medicaid expansion and other things that would help some of those lower income people get access to healthcare and feel better.
Exactly.
So you've got new research.
Well, and again, this is from the same Atlantic article, and we will put the link in the comments. So you can read it for yourself. But another study found that people who gained insurance coverage under the ACA were more likely to have access to health care. What do you know?
Go figure.
They spent $337 less on out-of-pocket costs. What do you know? And attended more preventative health care visits, which if you do your preventative health care, then you don't have to do the later, now I have a huge problem health care.
Exactly.
So you'll just be healthier all the way around. They were more likely to feel they were in excellent health. But here's the thing. Okay, so it's not the ACA is not perfect, but it pointed everything in the right direction. It's getting everything on track.
And that right direction, especially being to do things to help lower income people, maybe catch up with what the health rich people
at least health wise,
sure.
So that they can be exploited for their physical labor better by the rich. That's all you want, right? Anyway, under the American Health Care Act, the GOP's Obamacare replacement bill that passed the House of Representatives last month, many low-income Americans in the individual market would see their insurance premium rise. In case where premiums did not go up, it would likely be because health insurers could refuse to cover certain conditions, meaning out-of-pocket costs would skyrocket for sick people. So that sucks.
All disadvantaging those low-income folks.
Yeah. And again, if you have a pre-existing condition, and the list of pre-existing conditions is like being female, things like that. It's pretty terrible.
But hey, in good news, these bad things you're talking about that the Republicans want to do, that they passed in the House this May, The president apparently now feels those things are mean.
Yeah.
He originally, remember back in May, they broke out the beer or whatever was going on. Right. Had all the Republicans come to the White House to celebrate what Donald Trump called the great plan they just passed.
Well, and I don't think anybody thinks he actually read the bill. I know it's short, and there's probably a lot of pictures in the version of it they gave to him. And I'm not the person that noticed this. I believe it was Bill Maher who noticed it first. But Donald Trump tends to say whatever the last person in the room said to him. So maybe since Ivanka is getting so much crap recently, she's been in the news whining about how terrible people are to her. Maybe because her sweatshops are heinous and she's a bad person. But she probably said that this health insurance was... In such an articulate and vibrant language, it's mean.
And that is what some Senate staffers are reporting. The president said at a White House meeting yesterday that the House bill, health care bill, is mean, which we agree with completely.
Yeah, it's mean.
And that the Senate needs to pass a better, gorgeous, tremendous, awesome, buxom, who knows, bill.
Which I think they're probably going to put a lot of emojis on it with like smiley faces and stuff like that. So it's like, oh, see, it's nicer. It's like, it's fun. It's a fun way to lose your insurance and us still make a lot of money and then you die.
But whatever they're doing, they should look at this research and realize that the American system has a much bigger gap in how the rich are treated, or how they feel are treated, and how the poor are treated.
Yes.
And they should get their act together and say everybody, regardless of the money in their pockets, should get to be healthy.
Absolutely. And maybe instead of repeal and replace, we just start to fix what is working.
Yeah, tinker and improve.
Tinker and improve, absolutely. All right, let's move on. All right, we're sending beef to China. We're going to send hamburgers and steaks and ribs and yay!
This is our invasion strategy, right? We're going to fatten them up so they can't attack us.
I think so. Here's what happened. China started really liking beef recently for who knows what reason, but it's a $2.5 billion market. Mm-hmm. Now, we had a little bit of mad cow, I think it was in 2003, somewhere around there, and so China went, nope.
China got scared of our beef. They banned imports, or they wouldn't let us sell beef to their country.
And to be fair, it's because part of it was because also we banned their chicken because they have a bunch of avian flu outbreaks. And their chicken is, they don't have the standards that we have.
So wait, so China wasn't importing our beef. We weren't importing their chicken.
Right.
What are we going to do about this?
Well, we don't really need their chicken per se, but we really want to sell them their beef. So we're going to buy their chicken and maybe, I don't know what they'll do with it. Turn it into some kind of Russian roulette McNugget or something like that, where it's like, keep feeling brave, and then I don't know. But given the many outbreaks of avian flu China has experienced, there are also worries that raw Chinese poultry, if it were processed in the U.S., it could potentially contaminate American plants, somehow spread to birds here in the States. Tony Corbo, a senior lobbyist for the Food Campaign, Food and Water Watch, and an environmental advocacy group, has been raising concerns about the efforts to open the U.S. market to Chinese chicken imports for years. He questioned the Chinese government's ability to enforce food standards, given its poor track record. On the other... Oh, wait, one more thing. This is really... You're going to like this. If you're eating a sandwich, put it down.
About things we've imported from China.
Well, this is why China's chicken record isn't that great. That record included rack meat being sold as lamb, oil recovered from drainage ditches and gutters being sold as cooking oil, and baby formula contaminated with melamine that sickened hundreds and thousands of babies and killed six. In 2014, Shanghai food processing factory that supplied international restaurant brands, including McDonald's and KFC, was caught selling stale meat repackaged with new expiration dates.
Wow.
Yeah. On the other hand, we have a beef processing plant here, and it's going to help them make a ton of money, and that'll add a lot of money to our tax dollars and or to our tax base. It'll buy a lot of braces. It will make a lot of house payments. It will help you afford the new health insurance that you're going to get under the Trump administration that will not take care of you.
Well,
so
now,
you know, you gotta even the scales out.
But now this assumes that we're going to be able to sell that beef. It's one thing for China to say, "Sure, we'll let you sell your beef here." It's another to see if we can match the price, because one thing I noticed yesterday is TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
That was a big trade deal where the U.S. and China and all, you know, Pacific partners were going to get together and lower their tariffs and, you know, free trade. Trump pulled out of that.
Right.
And so yeah, U.S. has a lot of beef to move, but if our beef shows up and it costs 20 or 25% more compared to, say, Australia beef, was the example I saw, Australia's still in TPP. China's saying, yeah, we'll take the lead there.
Right.
If China can get their product to the Chinese market at a lower price because they don't have the trade restrictions that TPP gets rid of, well, then the U.S. is going to be at an unfair advantage. So Corey, we'll see how that pans out.
Corey, we negotiate the best deals. Our deals are the best deals. People love them. You know, they'll have some Trump steaks. They're the finest steaks that you can find in any airport store around the country of America. And they're not mean. People like them. You ask anybody that they will tell you our steaks are fantastic. And
you know, that there may actually be something legitimate within that fine impression. Yeah. U.S. beef, if we can market U.S. beef as being a better product, then maybe Chinese will pay a premium for it. We'll see what happens. I begrudge no one their hamburger. If they want a burger, they want a steak.
Sure.
China, you go ahead and eat up. That's fine with me.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see how it pans out. I hope it works out for the best. Oh, that was the other thing, though. They got rid of Cool, which was the
country of origin labeling. Well, yeah, and interestingly, the Chinese, they got some country of origin labeling in a way. They said to America, yeah, we'll buy your beef, but you have to have information with it where your producers tell us where the beef was born and where it was slaughtered. Because they want to track, I guess, you know, to make sure it didn't come from some cow with, or some farm with mad cow disease.
Sure.
But in a way, China is requiring us to tell them where the beef is coming from, while back here in the U.S. we just got rid of our country of origin labeling that lets us tell whether our beef or chicken or whatever is coming from Canada or Mexico or elsewhere overseas.
Now, and again, in defense of getting rid of that, the article I read about it did say that we have really high standards in America and that it's a little redundant to do it. However, our beef producers really seem to want it, and did it not give them like a little prestige, right?
Sure. They feel it gives them a market advantage. Yeah. I think that's kind of what I was suggesting about China. Our producers feel that if they can put a big old flag on the beef and say "Made in America," more people will buy it. And there are some people, just like with T-shirts or.
But are we going to be able to put big flags on the chicken and say "Made in China"? Not that I don't have plenty of products that are made in China. I just don't eat them.
That's a good question. I'll be curious to see how they market that.
Hey, man, I just want everybody to work it out. I'm not trying to cause problems with China or anything, man. They seem like nice people and everything like that. I just don't want to get food poisoning. And I do love Chinese food. Okay, hey, this is a positive thing. That's weird. We never talk about positive things.
Oh, Kevin, we do too. We're much more positive than people think. We're getting a new library here in Aberdeen. We just found out it's going to open this. The old library will close at the end of August. They'll take a few days to run the books across down the street, up the block. And then they'll open the new library on September 11th here in town. Be a great day for everybody. Go down and see the new books. It'll also be a great day, or at least it'll be coming up soon, for new Americans who want to use our new library. The Aberdeen Public Library is one of the lucky few applicants. There were 4,500 applicants nationwide for grants from the Night Cities Challenge. This is a national nonprofit. Mm-hmm. They were offering money to help cities come up with projects to make their communities better. Mm-hmm. Aberdeen was one of 33 out of some 4,500 groups who won a grant. Our library is getting $35,000 to create a one-stop information and assistance center for immigrants and new Americans, people who are new, not just to Aberdeen, but to our country.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll spend that $35,000 to create what they're calling the A Place. And the Library Foundation's been working with the local diversity coalition. And the plan is they'll have resources. They'll have internet access. They'll have materials helping people who are new to the country figure out the laws, where to find jobs, find some language resources, you know, just basic stuff that if you're new to a country is really useful to help you feel at home.
That's amazing. They're doing a very interesting show too called the Diversity Coalition hopes to bring a traveling exhibit. It's not a show, it's an exhibit called Green Card Voices to the library, which is recordings of immigrant stories, whether they're naturalized citizens, permanent residents, refugees, what's that last thing? And asylees?
Oh, asylees.
People getting asylum.
Yeah.
I've never run across the word asylees before. What do you know? Or persons on temporary visas. And so these people basically share their stories. For the larger audience.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of hear their background, where they're from, what they're about.
Yep. The Green Card Voices, it's actually a Minneapolis-based group, and they produce videos. You can see them on YouTube. They've also published a few books based on their interviews of immigrants from new Americans in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I believe in Fargo. They've done published a book out of those experiences. So the hope is to bring that exhibit here as well and give people some exposure to stories of new Americans, people who've left their homelands and come to say, yes, I like to be in America.
Yeah, maybe create a little empathy, a little bit of greater understanding. And yeah, it's a good thing.
And it's a good thing for libraries to do. It's one more way, you know, as we look forward to our new library opening. And people, you know, there was some debate in Aberdeen. Why do we even need a public library? Why do we want to invest millions of dollars in a new library? Do we even need the old one? Well, public libraries in general have a mission to kind of bring the community together.
Yeah.
Everybody in the community.
It's a public square.
It's a public square, and it's filled with public information.
Right.
And this project, the A Place and the Green Card Voices, is a way that the library meets its obligation to the newest members of our community as well, to say, welcome, here's information, here's how we can help you be a part of Aberdeen.
And these are people that are moving to Aberdeen to work in the beef plant so we can sell beef to China. See, it all ties together.
It does all tie together, and they'll all be healthier for it.
Let's talk about something so South Dakota that only people in South Dakota have ever thought about this very much. And I, frankly, I'm glad that we've resolved it for the year. I'm going to start cringing next year when we have to talk about it again, and the year after that, and the year after that. And this is the only reason I hope for a drought, so that these lakes will dry up, so that we never have to figure this out again. But they have figured out a temporary fix for the non-meandered lakes. It's HB1001.
Non-meandered lakes. There's a Siles and non-meandered. Those are our two new vocab words of the year.
Yeah, you're right. Before this year, not said non-meandered ever.
Me
either. Zero many times.
But the legislature fixed the problem this week.
Fixed-ish.
Fixed-ish.
Fixed-ish. For a little bit. A little background. In the 90s, some new lakes formed. There was a lot of snow runoff. It formed lakes.
Yeah,
those lakes were
years.
Full of fish. People wanted to fish on those lakes. They built docks. They gave access to those docks. And then in the recent past, they said, nope, we're chaining off those docks. You can't use these lakes anymore because they're on private property. And everything was kind of at a standstill.
Yeah. Fishermen, farmers, fisherwomen, farmer ladies, people arguing about public access to water versus private control of land.
Now, this whole thing, I've had quite a learning curve on this, and I've done a lot of investigative research just to try and figure out what is, because I don't think about water rights. Most people don't think about water rights. Did you know, you probably knew, did you know, listener, who maybe didn't know, if it's a navigable piece of water, meaning if you could put a boat on it, if you can do commerce on it, for example, ship things, or arguably fishing would be commerce because you can hire people to take you out fishing. Once you are 50 feet from the shore, that water becomes public, I wouldn't say commodity, but public property.
At least those are standards that you've found have been set in other states, right?
That's the national standard.
Okay, that's the national standard.
Yeah, I think that's the standard. I think that might even be the world standard. But to say the least, like, I was looking for other states and figuring out how they deal with this problem. They don't. That's the deal. if you're 50 feet off the shore and you can get a boat on it, pretty much it's public. It's now public land. And so the issue becomes portage, which means how do you get your boat to the water? They deal with that in different ways. But usually you have to create some kind of way to portage to the lake. And again, once you're 50 feet from the shore, then the owner of the land has a say in what happens there. But what they don't do is allow people to do what they're doing in South Dakota, which is you can kind of put up a sign, put up a buoy that says you can't come into this water.
Now, the signs and buoys are new.
The signs and buoys are new. And once you put up signs and buoys, this is our solution.
The legislature's solution.
Yes.
The legislature met this week on Monday. They hashed it out for 8 hours or 10 hours and finally set these new rules to say who can be on which of these new lakes.
Right, and you can demarcate your area, but once you do that, you can't, it's not like hunting. You can't go, and for $50, you can fish on my super awesome fishing pond that's full of fish because only a couple of people get to fish here.
Mm-hmm.
There is still the issue of once it freezes and people can hunt on it. I didn't get a clear answer on
that. As I understand the way this law is written, when it's water, if it's not marked, if it's a non-meandered lake and there are no signs or buoys, you and I can go fish. We can go boat. I think we can go water skiing. That wasn't addressed. But we can go recreate on these waters.
Right.
If we see signs, can't
then
go
can't.
On. If it's ice, there's a separate section in the bill. If it's ice, we can't go on it without permission.
That's right.
Which is kind of weird. I mean, it's still H2O.
Right.
But we've created a law now that treats H2O differently based on the phase of matter.
And it does seem like we're... I kind of like the fact that South Dakota is trying to respect people's land rights. I also realize this kind of got dropped in their lap. Again, I didn't see a lot of other cases around the country of this happening. Obviously, in the history of the earth, it happens all the time. But we just haven't had the recent property rights and the recent hunting and fishing rights the way we have them now that it became an issue that people are dealing with.
Now, the thing is, it's been an issue, apparently, since those lakes formed for over 20 years.
Right.
And this was
been trying to deal with it every year for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But that's not that long in the big picture.
Right. And not in the big picture, but it was part of the discussion in Pierre in the legislature on Monday. A lot of people were talking about how we've kicked this can down the road for 20 years. We need to act now. We need a solution. So that was kind of the debate that I heard Monday was less about, you know, the underlying issues of the land underlying the water, literally the underlying issues. And there was a lot more kind of meta discussion of what the legislature has or hasn't done, how we've waited too long, how we need to act. And I understand it's a tough issue because, you know, sports people, fishers and hunters, they get pretty irate when they feel their rights are stepped on.
Sure. Well,
just
also,
like landowners.
But they also, we don't have an income tax. We have a sales tax. And if you can get a bunch of hunters and fishers to come into our state and buy a bunch of stuff, it gives us a lot of tax dollars that we wouldn't otherwise have. But I also understand if I was in charge of this, I would want to go like, let's try this. They're trying to jerry-rig this fix that makes everybody happy. So if we do it for a year and everything burns down in flames, we can revisit in a year and come up with something that maybe works better. I don't begrudge them that.
But, and interesting that you mentioned that aspect of it, that we're going to try something for a year. That's what the bill turned into on Monday.
Yeah.
The original plan was they were going to put this plan in effect to open the non-meandered waters, but let landowners put signs up to say keep out and see if that worked over the next 4 years. They were going to have it expire in 2021.
Okay.
And then say, okay, so that means we've got to come back at it. On Monday, they amended it in the Senate. And they said, you know what? This is, apparently everybody feels it's such a ricky-tick, jerry-rig
right.
solution. They don't even trust it to last that long. And they changed it to expire next year, June
30th. Well, now on South Dakota Public Radio, they were talking about this yesterday. I had to sit in the parking lot and listen to the rest of the story because I was doing research for this. And they did a really wonderful job of laying everything out. But the reason they didn't want, that I heard, that they didn't want to go till 2020 was because there might be a whole bunch of new people there who have not done the research on this and don't understand all the nuances of it and everything they went to get to where they're at and why things work this way.
That's kind of a funny political reason, because really, if I'm a legislator, I should have faith that the legislature as an institution will always be able to muster the intelligence necessary to do something.
But also take notes.
Take notes, leave them for the next guy.
Here's a manila folder.
And there's kind of a contradiction there, because what they said is, 4 years from now, the legislators might not have as much information about this as we do. So instead, we're just going to try this for 1 year before we even have time to get information about whether the program worked. And we'll come again later. So
good point.
There's a and even in the bill itself, there's a conflict with that date on information gathering. The original bill ordered the Game, Fish, and Parks Department to conduct a study to gather bunches of data and make that report ready in 2019.
Right.
That provision is still there, but the law expires in 2018.
Sure.
So the law calls on Game, Fish, and Parks to do something after the law expires and no longer calls on them to do it. So whatever information they're going to have, basically with this 2018 sunset clause, we call it, the legislature has guaranteed that this issue doesn't go away right now, that it comes up and dominates the discussion again in the next legislative session in 2018, because they're going to have to revisit the solution and discuss it and decide, do we just let this die and go back to the confusing status quo ante, or do we create some new permanent solution? Mm-hmm. Or do we just extend what we did? The discussion's going to dominate legislature next year.
Even as we're having this conversation, it's so much stuff. I want to say, South Dakota legislators, I feel for you. I would not want to have to figure this out, because there's no way you're going to do this if people aren't going to be mad. Okay, because the problem now is, what if the fish swim past the sign? Because the fish didn't read the sign. And so now all the fish are on the private part of the lake. And I know the guy said he's not going to charge you to fish there. But, I mean, I think enforcing that's going to be really hard.
Oh, yeah. Well, you bring up two very good points. Number one, politically, this is an issue where people are going to be mad.
No matter what.
And the legislature, they talked about that on Monday. They said they got some mean calls, nasty calls. I'm like, well, welcome to the job. This is a hard decision, and that's why they've kept kicking it down the road for the last 20 years, because they knew whichever way we go, people are going to get mad, and I'm scared of that. It's a hard decision to make. Secondly, you mentioned the enforceability on that, making money on it. That's a really good point, because Chris Hesla, who represents the Wildlife Foundation in South Dakota, he had a letter to the editor going around before the special session Monday saying, you know what, that prohibition, it's shot full of holes. The actual prohibition in Section 6 of the bill says, no owner of private property may receive financial compensation in exchange for granting permission to fish on a portion of a closed, non-meandered water on private lake. Receive compensation for permission to fish. Okay, fine. If I have a farm and I've got flooded land and I want to make money, this bill doesn't stop me. I just charge people for, parking their truck on my land. Or, here's a bucket of bait. Or, would you like to stay in my barn? While you're here, hey, go fish for free.
Right.
Totally unenforceable. There's loopholes all around this. The spirit of the law, yes. And this was an amendment by Senator Brock Greenfield, who lives just down the road from us in District 2. His intent was to stop the commercialization of these waters. Section 6 isn't going to do that. So we'll see how that plays out, and we'll see it sooner rather than later, because the legislature has to pick this up again in the next session, just several months from now. One good thing about this issue, you're absolutely right, Spencer. It's complicated. It takes some reading. It takes some thinking. One reason it's complicated is that the parties involved don't get their prefab talking points from Rush Limbaugh.
Yes, exactly right. We have to sit down and figure this out for ourselves.
Yeah.
And even ideologically, I think it gets very mushy.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit into Republicans and Democrats both fish. Republicans and Democrats both farm.
Right.
There's no partisan line. There's no ideological line. It's a good local practical issue, you know, with some issues of principles too. The importance of conservation, hunting and fishing, and the importance of private property rights. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit into the paradigm of typical talk radio or the national media. And so when this goes to peer, you're going to see a lot of those kind of typical talk radio things about refugees and transgender bathrooms and abortion. Rah, that's going to get crowded out by just regular South Dakotans trying to figure out, where can we fish?
Yeah. 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 And from an environmental standpoint, I mean, you do need hunting to control population. As you can see, if you've ever driven down Highway 12, we have a lot of deer in this state. And if humans weren't hunting them, we would all be having car accidents every 5 minutes, and they would be eating our crops, and they, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And fishing, that's part of the ecosystem as well. Mm-hmm. We need hunting and fishing. They're good for nature and they're good for the economy. Yeah. And we need clear rules about how we're going to conduct those activities and who gets to set the rules for that. It's a good issue for South Dakota to resolve.
All right, figure it out, guys. Keep up the good work. Try not to get too frustrated. Hey, let's talk to our guest. Is from South Dakota, and she's super involved in South Dakota, and she's doing a lot of great things that are also helping a lot of other people get super involved in what's going on in South Dakota.
Roxanne Weber is going to talk to us about some political activity she's engaged in, including just some online activism, some ballot initiative, and we love those, and about some good events coming up in the fall.
Yeah. All right, Roxanne.
All right. My name's Roxanne Weber. I'm currently living in Pierre, South Dakota, originally from Aberdeen, and kind of been around, lived in Illinois for quite a while, but South Dakota born and raised.
You've gotten more politically involved in the past year or so, it seems mm-hmm. like, right?
Yeah.
What is your political activism and what has led you into it?
Okay. Oh, well, a lot of political activists, of course, the election had a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. After the election, I got involved with a group in Pierre called South Dakota Forward. They had just started. They'd only been around for a month or two. After the election, we were getting together and talking about what can we do, and we were all, of course, frustrated. And we're like, you know, we really want to do something with action, you know, something we can actually do, not just complain about it. And so we were all sitting in this coffee shop or whatever, and we're talking about the Women's March. And somebody's like, you know, even if it's just the 12 of us, we're just going to go out and we're going to, you know, we're going to do this thing. And so I said, well, we're not just not going to be 12 of us. And so I made sure that we had kind of a really nice event. And to everyone's amazement, in Pierre, we had over like 130 people. So I was really just thrilled with that. And at that point, I thought to myself, you know, I was involved in politics when Daschle and Johnson were around, kind of on a peripheral level, but nothing ever to this extent. And I could just tell that the feel was different. Like the ambience of the whole political environment was just different.
What was that difference? A difference in who was active and what they were active about? Tell us more about that difference.
I think it was who. I tended to see a lot more younger people that I wouldn't have originally thought. People with kids that don't have a lot of time. Older people who might not necessarily come out to an event even though they supported a certain position. It was the feel. It was like people realized, you know, we really got it. We have to do something here.
Sure.
We just can't sit back and not do anything.
What specifically did South Dakota Forward do to get the Women's March going?
Well,
what is South Dakota Forward?
Right. Well, that's a good point. Okay, so South Dakota Forward is actually an organization that's grown from about 500 people before the election to now over 3,000 people. Oh. And it started as just a Facebook group where people could just kind of talk about stuff, what's going on.
And to be clear, when you say from 500 to 3,000, that's based on what count?
On the membership that we have on the Facebook group.
Okay, the people who've clicked, followed on
right.
that, get
yep.
the notices.
Okay. And there's more people we know because I've been chewed out that they've been looking for a way to try and connect with us and they didn't know how because they don't do Facebook.
And these people have all gotten together to do what?
Lots
what is
of,
the focus
of
South
things.
Dakota Forward now?
So,
you mentioned the march.
Yep.
So is protest or what kind of actions?
Yep. So what we've talked about is that we want to be the arm of political activity and we want to kind of be the people power. So we weren't necessarily there to start stuff. Right? We were there to support efforts we thought were really important. So we've done the Women's March. We used to do vigils every Sunday. I think they still do that. Vigils every Sunday on the corner. It's something Pierre's probably never seen.
The
ever.
Corner in Pierre, downtown,
in Pierre. So
out the edge
was,
of town.
It
where
was
do we
at
go?
The federal building, which is like right on Sioux Avenue.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's something people have never seen. And we'd have a whole line of people with these signs, you know, for it started as kind of a support vigil with the Trump ban, the Muslim ban.
We will put a link to it in the comments below,
that
too.
Would be
but
great.
How do people find Forward South Dakota?
South Dakota Forward. We
South
actually
Dakota.
Have a website, South Dakota. DakotaForward.org, and then we're also on Facebook. So if you search South Dakota Forward on Facebook, I'm sure you'd be able to find it that way as well. We have a page, a public page. Our group, though, is a private group. You have to ask somebody to get involved. So,
and that group is for?
That's the one that started out where we're
okay.
just here to talk about what's going on. We're frustrated. A lot of people worried that if they started expressing these opinions, because we're such a conservative state, they have family and friends and they were going to get kickback and they were going to get people angry with them. And so this was an outlet.
Sure.
So this was a place where they could express their anger, put up funny pictures of people
yeah.
that they thought would be funny.
Yay.
And, you know, do all that kind of stuff.
Now
so
that concern about making people mad or stepping on toes, do you find that concern is maybe greater in Pierre, in the state capital?
I think that it might be because a lot of us are state workers. And so
okay.
many people, in fact, before I even got involved with the Women's March, I'm like, is this a really smart thing to do? I mean, you know, I work for the state. Some past governors have been known to come in and simply say, I don't, you know, you you're gone, just because they didn't like what they were, you know, what they said.
We can say that's the Janklow era,
that
right?
That would be the Janklow era, yes. So, but I've never seen anything like that from the current governor at all. I've never heard anything. Nobody's ever said anything to me. There's never been, you know, I haven't had anybody come up to me and say, you know, you're a state, you know, employee, you shouldn't be out there demonstrating. I've never had anybody say anything. So I think that's good, because what that says is that, you know, Degarde might have his faults, but he's not going to worry about these little petty things. And he knows that it's the right of citizens to express their opinions. That's our law.
So at least based on your experience, and I mean, I've heard this too, especially coming from the Janklow era, keep your head down or you'll lose your job
exactly
in this state.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You would feel comfortable if someone came to South Dakota Forward and said, gee, I'd like to march or participate in your other activities, but I'm afraid I'll get retribution for that.
Yes.
You'd feel comfortable saying, don't worry about that. You can express yourself.
Well, I would for myself. Everybody has to make their own choice.
Okay.
But what we have done is, you know, we used to just snap pictures and take videos and stuff, and now we're a little more cognizant that maybe we should ask people, is it okay if this might be shared with the press, for instance, because some people just don't want their face on the front news of the press. And some of our events have made it to the front news of the Peer Chronicle.
Which one certainly wants.
Journal.
I mean, you can't do a protest, you know, out in the woods and not have anybody hear it. Otherwise, it doesn't happen.
Exactly right.
Right.
Exactly right. So that, you know, has been something we've actually thought about. And for those efforts, we've actually made some steps to ensure that people feel comfortable.
It sounds like what you're saying is, if you don't want to make your boss angry, but you still want to express yourself, South Dakota Forward has figured out ways for you to become involved without putting your neck out on the line.
Exactly. So the private group, which you can be invited to, allows you to express whatever you want.
Okay.
And that information can't be shared outside of that private group.
And does it also manifest itself in, like, fundraising things, in, like, voter registration? You know what I mean? Like, organizational things? Is there also mechanisms like that?
Right. Well, I've done several of those things. I think that the organization itself is kind of deciding where they're going to go next.
Okay.
There's been some talk of, are we going to, you know, create a NGO? Are we going to, you know, or nonprofit organization, sorry. Are we going to become a 501c? What are we going to do now? Do we want to fundraise, or do we just want to be the arm of these other efforts? And I think right now the focus has been, we're just here so that when a good effort comes up, when the elections come up, we want to be out there getting voters registered. We want to be out there trying to help people get to the polls, but not necessarily the focus, at least for that group. And I can't really speak too much more about what they want to do in the future, simply because I'm not the leaders of those organizations. I know that Indivisible 605, which is also a South Dakota Forward group that started shortly after the election or right in that area, they have some activities coming up. They're also on the website, and theirs is a public group, so you can join them. And there's also, of course, LEAD, which is another, Leaders Involved. Oh, I can't remember what the acronym means. I'm sorry.
Leaders Engaged in Doing Stuff.
Yeah,
something
there
like
you
that.
Go. Leaders Engaged. And that one's focused kind of on women. And I know what they're doing is they're doing everything they can to try and get elected as many women in South Dakota as they can.
So they're recruiting candidates.
They're recruiting candidates.
Okay.
Well, not necessarily recruiting, but supporting those who are saying, I'm going to run, you know.
I mean, there are three groups right there. There's South Dakota Forward, Indivisible 605, and then LEAD. And my apologies, LEAD. I know you're out there. I look at your Facebook page. I don't remember the acronym either.
Yep.
But Leaders Engaged in Doing Stuff sounds good to me.
Something like that.
There are three groups that people who would like to engage in some political action at all sorts of levels that they can look up on Facebook and get involved.
Absolutely,
Well, it's really interesting. Now, Roxanne, I mean, that's a lot of stuff right there. But on top of that, you're also sponsoring a ballot measure, correct?
Correct.
An initiative in the parlance of ballot measures here.
Yep.
Is that part of South Dakota Forward, or is that a separate effort?
No, that's a separate effort.
That's
myself and Nicholas Rasmussen, who's out of Sioux Falls. Both of us came to a point at which we thought that this was something that was really important for our state, that we wanted to focus on initiated measures and the referendum process because we wanted to make sure it was protected.
Okay, now protected.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about that. I mean, the initiative and referendum process, just for our viewers at home, that's that process where we go take out petitions and citizens either try to overturn bad laws, that's the referendum, or they try to pass laws that, well, we hope they're good, but that, you know, they come from the citizens rather than the legislature. For instance, last year there was initiated measure 22 about campaign finance reform. There was the initiated measure about capping in, payday loan rates at 36%. Those were initiated laws. You say that that process of initiative and referendum needs protection. Protection from what?
How I really got really involved in all this activist stuff was when initiated measure 22 came to the chopping block, if you will, in the legislature.
Specifically, what did IM 22 cover?
Oh yes, IM 22 covered anti-corruption measures. It also included these democracy credits, which some people weren't crazy about.
What is a democracy credit?
What it is every voter gets a certain amount of dollars, and then that money goes towards the campaign, the political campaign of their choice. And so it caps campaign finance monies towards campaigns. So the measure passed 51%, somewhere in there, by the voters in the election. But the legislators felt that it was problematic. They thought there were constitutional issues. They thought there was a lot of stuff they didn't like. And they thought they just didn't like it. So a bunch of legislators got together and actually sued to try and get the measure, I guess, quashed, or I don't know what the exact legal thing they were trying to do. But they were suing to try and get rid of it. Well, why, if you're a legislator, would you leave that just alone and let it go through the court process when you're a legislator, and instead you can kill it in the legislature?
Which they did in January.
So, and there's two ways you can do this. You can either simply repeal a measure. A legislature can repeal any measure, whether it's initiated by the people or whether it's initiated by themselves. And they could repeal it, but if they simply repealed it, then it automatically goes to referendum, which means now it goes back to the ballot, or if enough people get a signature for a referendum, it can go back to the ballot and we vote on it again to say yes or no as to whether it should stay.
Which is a lot of back and forth there, but conceivably that could have happened. The legislature repeals our initiative. Citizens could have gotten mad and said no, 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 and they could have put that repeal back to a vote again.
Well, that happened. That happened with the minimum wage law. Where the minimum wage passes because based on an initiated measure.
Back in 2014,
Said we want a minimum wage, and then the legislature gets into session and says, well, okay, minimum wage for adults, but not for kids. And so they actually created the this, or I don't know what they did with it. I don't think they instituted any laws at that point. But what happened
they
was...
They tried. They called it a youth minimum wage. They were going to make it lower for kids, like you were saying.
And the voters were like, no, that's not what we had in mind. It went back to referendum for a vote at this last election, and overwhelmingly, over 70%,
it passed. So what you're saying is the legislature has tried this before. The people pass a law. The legislature repeals it. And then the people have to do all this work again to try to undo the repealing, to make their law stick.
But yet they say it's too easy of a process.
So what you're saying is with initiated measure 22, we passed a law, the legislature repealed it, and then they somehow prevented us from putting it back?
So what they can do is they have an emergency clause that they can implement on any repeal that they are trying to get passed. This emergency clause is for the health, safety, and welfare of the state. And it's in a situation in which they feel like the health, welfare, or safety of the state is at jeopardy, and this law must be repealed, and it cannot go to a vote of the people. It cannot go back for referendum.
I'm going to ask you a question preemptively, because if you move forward with what you're doing, this is going to come up, so I just want it on record. You're an out-of-state entity who's being paid by out-of-state forces to corrupt the laws of South Dakota? Yes or no?
No.
Well, How about that? Because that's what they always say. Every time something comes up, they're like, well, out-of-state people are coming here and they're blah, blah, blah.
I follow what you're saying. Yeah, they're going to have a hard time with that because Nicholas and I are both born and bred South Dakotans.
Right. Well, I mean, I know they also said a lot of the Women's Day protesters were from out-of-state.
Absolutely right, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
They like to use those as an excuse.
I'm being facetious, but I also want it on tape so that when people are listening to it. Anyway, continue.
That's funny. Okay.
Good. Well, yeah, so Roxanne, you're saying like initiated measure 22, that got a lot of people upset that the legislature repealed it, cut the legs out from under us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so you want to protect the initiative and referendum process apparently from those kind of legislative shenanigans.
Yes. And I
tell
will tell
us
you,
how you'll do that.
Well, let me tell you. Well, ours isn't a fix all. And mm-hmm.
You aren't fixing everything?
We're not fixing everything.
Boo. Go ahead. What are you fixing?
And it still has a two-thirds, vote that if they get two-thirds vote, they can still override mm-hmm. what we're attempting to do.
The legislature
The difference
can.
Is the legislature can, mm-hmm. and they already have a two-thirds vote. We know that because they have a supermajority. However, if they do that, no matter whether it's an emergency clause or however they repeal it, it must go back to referendum.
Okay.
So it ensures that whatever they do with a repeal to anything that's initiated by the people, we have the final say in whether or not we like what they've decided.
What can people do to A, learn more about it, and B, support it?
Okay, so we have a website, sdvoterprotection.info. There I have the actual language. We actually have gotten our language back from the Attorney General as well. He has to give a summary of our measure. Well, this isn't a measure, our constitutional amendment, before we can even put our petitions together. So I've put the petitions together, and I went back to the Secretary of State's office. We're now waiting for the final okay before we can start printing. So there's a volunteer list. There's a link where you can give us your information to volunteer to help circulate petitions. Of course, there's a donation link if you feel that's better than running around with petitions. Just in general, sharing our information. We have a Facebook site, a page as well, sharing our information with everyone else. So really, I think we're the underdogs here. We don't have any money. We're paying for the printing ourselves right now.
I was going to say, Roxanne, you say donations. People are going, oh, what do they want my money for? What does a ballot question committee need money for? What will donations be used for?
So initially the donations, of course, for the petition process will be used for printing, for clipboards, for pens, for mailing. That's going to probably cost more than anything. Everything has to get to Pier. And while we've got Aberdeen, Sioux Falls, and Rapid covered, all the littler areas, people who want to help support in those areas, we've got to have stuff mailed back to us so we can then give it to the Secretary of State's office when we're done.
Just a lot of basic office costs.
There's a lot of basic office costs. Once we get to that point, once we have gotten all of our petition signatures, which I really don't think we're going to have a problem doing, to be honest, because a lot of people are waiting to sign this piece of paper. Once that happens, then it's a matter of advertising to get the message out, why we're doing it, what we're doing. And if we get Koch Brothers or someone like that who's going to throw $100,000, $300,000 at us of negative ads, there's going to have to be some way we can counter that in order to keep people from thinking that what we're trying to do is going to be harmful, which it isn't.
Sure. Well, and even, you mentioned IM-22 mm-hmm. for that lawsuit. The Republican Party, it was Republican legislators, and I think the Family Heritage Alliance, big lobbying group based in Rapid City, they had the money to get lawyers and stuff to try to take it to court.
Yeah.
So, there were big money people who didn't like IM-22. There are big money people, like you say, who aren't going to like any measure that lets the citizens keep their power.
Well, but I've been surprised at the support we're hearing from legislators.
Really?
Yeah. Even some conservative ones.
Really? So both sides.
Yes. Uh-huh. And we're trying to ask, we know you can't perhaps come out and publicly support us, but can we at least say this is something that you think is worthwhile to help let people know that there are actually legislators that think this is a good idea, not just Democrats.
Is there any way to bake into the verbiage of your measure things that will protect it from the fate that happened to IM-22?
You mean the part where they repealed with an emergency clause?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, this would, because now with this constitutional amendment, which supersedes any statutes, by the way, because now it would be in the Constitution, just like our initiated measure process is now. Any vote to repeal anything initiated by the people, even with an emergency clause, must be able to be brought forth as a referendum.
It doesn't have to go to referendum, but the people will have that option.
They have the option, exactly right.
And you emphasized a key word there. You said constitutional amendment. IM-22 was just a statute.
An initiated measure, exactly.
And so the legislature could overturn that.
Mm-hmm.
Constitutional amendments, the way our process works, is the legislature can't touch the Constitution itself. Constitutional measures have to go to the people.
They can make an effort to express what they want changed, but it has to go to the people for a vote before it gets approved.
Right, right. Yeah. So that sounds to me like that could be one of the most important protections to avoid kind of an IM-22 fate.
Yep.
The fact that you're asking South Dakotans to bake this into the Constitution where the legislature can't get at it.
Well, and I'll tell you why it's so important, because we were at a Cracker Barrel once and a man literally walked up with his voter registration card, slapped it on the desk in front of a legislator and said, "You might as well keep this because it's no good to me anymore." Because people feel like their vote doesn't matter if they know that even if I vote for something at the voting booth, if the legislature can say, we don't like that emergency, and repeal it without our being able to say anything about it, what good is his vote?
Sure. And you mentioned kind of the history that demonstrates that, you know, the legislature's effort to overturn the minimum wage, mm-hmm. overturn IM-22.
Yes.
Even in the press this week, we were talking earlier, you heard some other legislators who are they're working on a task force that's going to discuss initiative and referendum. And you've heard at least one legislator say he wants to weaken our ability to do initiative and referendum, correct?
David Lust feels that he
David has, Lust, he's from Rapid City.
He stated essentially that he felt that what he was hearing was people were frustrated there were too many ballot measures and that perhaps it was too easy of a process. And I can tell you, getting almost 30,000 signatures across the state
mm-hmm.
sure isn't an easy feat. Ask anybody, including a lot of people the last election who weren't able to get their ballot measure on the ballot, how easy that is. It is not that easy to do. So, but he seems to feel that perhaps the process is too easy and that maybe there are, I think he said, tweaks or modifications to the initiated measure process that could make it less easy for this to happen.
This, of course, from a legislator for whom all he has to do to put a measure up for a vote with his buddies is walk down the hall, sign a piece of paper, and then get some wealthy lobbyists to back him. And you face a process where you and your volunteers to put something on the ballot, I think you said you're going to need at least 30,000 South Dakotans to...
I think
contact you and sign your paper.
27,800 something.
Yep,
but
in that neighborhood.
We anticipate needing at least 30,000. A measure last election cycle ended up not on the ballot. They got 500 over the signatures, but by the time they pulled out duplicates and problematic ones, they didn't get their numbers.
Right.
So it ended up not going on the ballot.
And I've been involved in ballot questions before, and I've always kind of adopted 20% as my cushion above the minimum number of signatures.
Oh.
And I've had people say, 20% is even cutting it close. And I can see what they're saying.
And I should mention, because there was talk last legislative session of upping those numbers, our constitutional amendment gives a protection for that as well.
Ah.
And it ensures that 10% is a cap and cannot be increased, so that what they talked about doing was doubling the number of petition signatures you would need for certain initiated measures.
The legislature was going to try that.
Initiatives, yep.
Wow.
It didn't
get
through, but...
Over the summer, in the interim, the legislature is having a task force that's going to meet several times to discuss the issue. Right, and that task force is kind of getting together and holding hearings this summer to gather information that will inform maybe legislation that the legislators will try to do come next January to sabotage initiative and referendum.
I'll definitely be at the public hearings.
Good, and I think the first public hearing on that task force is June
21st.
It starts on the 20th, but there's a public hearing in
on the 21st. So if you want to get if you're interested in getting active about this issue in particular, show up for the public hearings and make sure that you have your voice heard. That's
you bet.
For sure.
And that's Wednesday, June 21st, I think at 9:00 in the Capitol building in Pier. We'll put a link to that meeting agenda as well so folks know where that is.
Mm-hmm.
Roxanne, there was one other topic we wanted to talk with you about, I think, and that was you're organizing a whole nother event come, I think you said, in September. Tell
in
us
September,
about these public kind of, I don't know, is it activism? Is it education? What's going on?
Well, originally, it started out as an activist event. You mm-hmm. know, let's get all these activist people together and let them see how, when we're together, we have so much power.
Your South Dakota Forward and Lead and Indivisible,
all
these groups,
groups
right.
and people who are out there just trying to do make a difference. And then it evolved after I talked to a couple ladies in Sioux Falls who were doing something rather unique but yet so important. And what they're doing is they started with a small group of people, Democrats and Republicans, and they said, okay, we've got these divisive issues, and what's really holding politics up, I think what's really holding politics up, is the divisiveness of our political issues. When I was growing up, a Republican was not much different than a Democrat. We had differences in how we were going to fix problems, but for the most part, we were on the same side in terms of knowing what the problems were.
We wanted to fix problems. We just right. had some discussion about how
exactly.
to do it.
Exactly. And okay. today, it seems that the real issue is a total disagreement about what the problems even are. And so what this does is let's say climate change. You've got some people who say, BS, it doesn't exist. And then you've got people who say, are you kidding? We're about ready to boil to death. And so for that issue, we come together with people who left-lean and people who right-lean. And we say, what kind of consensus can we come to? There must be some common ground. And this is where I started. I wanted a common ground effort for this event. Mm-hmm. And so what we're actually doing is we're inviting experts to share their opinions on both sides of these issues. There's going to be four politically divisive issues that are difficult to talk about with people that don't have your political views. And I've had a lot of people tell me, you know, what do we say to people who, you know, love something that seems to not make any sense? When you're trying to not necessarily tell them what to think, but yet, can we get to what the meat of the issue is here instead of just being upset with each other? Mm-hmm. So there'll be experts there that are going to express these issues on both a conservative side and a legislative side. And then the participants themselves are going to get into smaller groups. And they're going to come to, okay, if we can't have our way on either side of the spectrum, how far to the center can we come?
So this isn't just a show up on a stage and we all sit in the audience
nope.
and watch.
Nope.
It's You're having experts start the conversation, but everybody who attends is going to participate in
yep.
these kind of small groups.
Yep. And then the best part is this. The groups are going to come back to our larger session, and there's going to be a panel of legislators, local leaders, people who are making our laws. And we are going to say, here's what we came up with as a group of individual people with different political views. Now, how would you help us make that happen? The last part of the entire convention is a question and answer with these lawmakers, allowing citizens to ask legislators, how are you going to help us make our politics better for everybody?
Now, do you have a model that you're basing this on, or did you sit down and kind of rub your noggins? Because you're really the first person. This is the biggest problem in America right now,
yeah,
is that people
is.
Don't know how to talk to each other
but
anymore.
I will tell you, though, I talked to a very dynamic Dave Weiss. He came to me at the McGovern Days event, and he said, you know, in the 70s, we used to have this We the People effort. And he said at that point, he actually explained that what they did was they used that energy to fundraise so they could have lobbyists for citizens in Pierre. And I thought that was an excellent idea. Mm-hmm. But when I explained to him what we were envisioning for this effort, he said, oh, gosh, that you have to do that first. Because I think he perhaps saw the same thing I did, which was it's the divisiveness. We didn't have that in the 70s. We needed money to influence politics. Now we need a way for people to come together before we can influence politics.
I'll be very interested to see if people are able to maintain like indoor voices and just have conversations respectively.
Well,
because I think we demonize each other a lot,
yep.
but I also think both sides go, well, we are classy, refined people who can have a conversation, but they can't. So
yep.
hopefully.
Well, and we will have a pretty strict foundation. In the small group sessions, as you're going around and trying to come up with this common ground, if you say, well, I'm there's no way I could change my mind, well, then you're done. You can't. There's no more talking.
Sure.
Because we're there to find the common ground. And if you've already come in with a closed mind that there's no other options, then you're there's no point in being there because you've already closed yourself off to the possibilities.
And do you have, I guess, guidelines for civility?
I think we might need bouncers. What do you think?
Well, I think you might need metal detectors, too, in South Dakota. People like their guns.
Yeah, that is a good point. I don't know. I mean, here's what I'm hoping is, I think that before you can get civility, you have to expect it.
Sure.
So I think by telling people, look, we're coming here to find a common ground, you're going to encounter ideas, thoughts, opinions that you're not going to like.
Right.
But you have to be willing to see past that and willing to see the future. And if you really want what's best for your children, my grandchildren, you know, our future, climate change is a huge issue that has to be addressed one way or the other. And if it's not, all it's going to do is continue to deteriorate, and there won't be any point of any of this.
Yeah. I would say bring a talking stick or something like that. I feel like
that's probably
going to come
in. Well, we were talking about in the large session, I think that's where we're going to get most of the Q&A at the end is problematic. I think we're going to do a microphone effort with people walking around the audience, and if you don't have the mic, you don't talk.
When and where is this event happening?
The event's going to be in Sioux Falls and Rapid City. The Rapid City one is one that's still kind of more in development. We want to have one there, but we haven't decided should it be the same day, but then that stretches our staff people, or should we have it the next weekend? We haven't completely come to that consensus yet, and we're still looking for the best inexpensive location. We don't have a location yet, but it'll be September 16th.
That's the Sioux Falls event.
The Sioux Falls event will be September 16th from like 8:30 to 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
And if they want to get updates on the exact where, the location for that, and for the Rapid City event, what's the best place to look?
Any of these organizations, statewide organizations. I know I've gotten interest from Indivisible 605 to be a big part of this, so that would probably be the first place to go. Mm-hmm. But I also am a member of all of those groups, and I usually cross-post all that information.
Again, Indivisible 605.
And I'll probably ask Corey to put it on his website.
Dakota Free Press will definitely publicize it, but if you're following on Facebook, you want that update, you look at Indivisible 605, the
South
lead
Dakota
group
forward,
leaders
lead
engaged,
group.
And on the South Dakota Forward group, the moment you get venues nailed down for Sioux Falls and for Rapid City, and when you get a date for the Rapid City civil discourse, policymaking, consensus sessions, South Dakota Forward and the other groups will have that on there.
They will, absolutely, yep.
Wow, well, you sound like you're awfully busy, Roxanne.
Is it
tiring you out yet, or do you have more of this kind of organizing in you?
No, I think actually, I remember somebody said to me, well, gosh, you shouldn't keep doing all this stuff because it's going to burn you out. And I'm like, no, I'm like ADD. I don't need it. I can just keep going. But I think the reality is whenever anybody decides to get involved in these kinds of things, it's the passion for it that drives them. And I think that's what I have to tell you, when I was standing in the Senate gallery looking down on the Senate, watching them repeal IM-22 with an emergency clause and acting as if they were going to have no repercussions whatsoever for it, my heart broke, honestly, because I saw our civil democracy in this state just eroding. I just saw it as like the first step to saying, we don't care what you think. We can do what we want.
Well, Roxanne Weber from Pierre, tell us one more time, if people want to get involved in South Dakota Forward, in your petition drive, or in your civil discourse events in September, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah. Well, you can always email me, Roxanne W, it's R-O-X-A-N-N-E-W @gmail.com. I answer all my emails except for junk. Don't send me spam. And of course, you can go to SouthDakotaForward.org. We actually post events on that website as well if you're not a Facebook person. If you're a Facebook person, we have a Facebook page for South Dakota Forward. And then you can simply ask myself or anyone who's an administrator on the South Dakota Forward page to get invited to the group if you're interested in kind of getting involved in that more private discussion of events.
Great. Roxanne Weber from Pierre, South Dakota Forward, Voter Initiative Protection Amendment, and civil discourse events coming up in September.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming to talk with us
today.
Thank
you so much for letting me sit down with you guys.
We have to go to the thing in Sioux Falls, right? I mean, we kind of have to.
Boy, well, you know, it's a coin flip for me because I love going to Sioux Falls and it's closer. But Rapid City, the Black Hills, in the fall,
beautiful.
Leaves turning in Spearfish Canyon, I could make that a weekend trip as well. I think either event would be great for South Dakotans to attend.
Maybe do both. All right. Hey, man, do you got anything coming up?
Just hanging out on a beautiful summer day, it looks like to me.
Fantastic. Hey, if you like the show, please throw a couple of bucks in the tip jar. It helps us keep the lights on. Maybe someday we'll be able to get some microphone stands or something like that. That would be fantastical.
More microphones, more interviews. We could interview two or three people at once.
All kinds of stuff. All kinds of ways we could upgrade. But also, it just it pays for web hosting. It pays for, you know, there's a lot of things we could do with your money. So if you got a couple of pennies, please throw them in the tip jar. You'll find it on the sidebar. You'll find it in the comment section. Also, if you like the podcast, share it with people. If you have questions or comments, I don't go to your blog. I try not to stay out of the comment section of your blog because I always get in fights. I know we have a lot of people of German heritage. Hello.
Guten Tag.
There.
Mein Herren, die Frauen.
You've been acknowledged. You're German. Great. So anyway, and I'm not, and that became a point of contention on the thing, but if you want to read that whole thread, you could read it on the blog. Anyway, I'm Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger, somewhat of German descent.
Not at all of German descent on this end. We'll see you next week.